The following is a handcrafted, finely aged encore presentation of Car Talk.
You forgot vine ripened. Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're broadcasting this week from the Center for Creativity, Bravado, and Natural Selection here at Car Talk Plaza.
Well, I think that's appropriate, but to tell you the truth, I'm not sure because I haven't read this yet.
You know what people love about our show? The preparation.
But right. I could tell just from the first paragraph that it was something that I wanted to read. I'll read you the note. I listen to your show at work. I love your show. My husband gets Flying Magazine and showed me this story. Thought you would get a boost from this, from Val Stallius from St. Flaco, Florida. St. something, Florida. I don't know. You've heard of Rickenbacker and Lindbergh and Doolittle. But have you heard of Larry Walters? Probably not. Yet Walters was made of that special stuff that separates aviation legends from the common run of folk. In 1982, Walters, this is what got me, this next paragraph. In 1982, Walters, a truck driver by trade, bought a bunch of weather balloons. Some sources say 42, some 45. He filled them with helium and tied them to a lawn chair.
Were they packed in cosmoline?
When I got to this point, I said, this has got to be good. So he ties 45 weather balloons to a lawn chair. He provided himself with a two-way radio, a parachute, some jugs of water, and a rifle, and then cut his conveyance loose from the bumper of his car, which was anchoring it to the ground. Take a moment to imagine the thrill and terror of that ascent, transforming a man surrounded by the normal appurtenances of life, garden, house, sport utility,
terra firma,
into a speck floating in an infinite space. Had he rigged up some sort of seatbelt? Did the chair tip and wobble? Did he call out to the ant-like figures below? We don't know. It is clear, however, that he violated FARs. I don't know what that means. It's all caps. But just don't forget, this is in Flying
Federal
Magazine.
Federal Aviation Regulations.
I love it. By passing through the Los Angeles TCA, we don't know what that is either, without a transponder or a clearance. Two passing jetliners reported to controllers that they had seen a man with a gun seated on a deck chair at 11,000 feet. A helicopter went up to take a look. Walters had planned to descend.
I got it by shooting out one balloon.
You
at
got
time.
It, man.
And well, the gun. I couldn't figure out the gun until
couldn't
now.
Couldn't figure out the gun either. Walters had planned to descend by shooting out the balloons with his gun, one at a time. He had deflated 10 of them this way when he accidentally dropped the gun. I told you this was going to be good.
And what were the first two words he uttered when he dropped the gun?
Where was I? When he accidentally dropped the gun. Wait, I can't read now. Evidently, 10 was enough. After being carried out to sea and back on the vagrant coastal breezes, he was snagged by power lines in Long Beach and led away in handcuffs. Ooh.
Yeah.
He's reported to have said, by way of explanation of his exploit, a man can't just sit around.
I guess not.
Walters subsequently fell on hard times, became bankrupt, and died by his own hand in 1993. But his memory survives as a model of those qualities of independence, vision, and disregard for common caution, without which aviation would never have come into being.
Exactly. I mean, what if the powers that were went and arrested the Wright brothers for doing something reckless?
Exactly.
Exactly. It takes vision.
He had deflated 10 of them when he accidentally dropped the gun.
I love it.
Oh, boy.
Anyway, if you'd like to talk to us about your car or maybe an upcoming flight in a helium
balloon. In a lawn chair.
The number to call is 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name is Esther from Denver.
Esther.
How are you guys?
Esther, is that with Esther with an H or like is that Polyester?
No, it's with an H.
With an H.
All right.
From Denver.
From Denver.
Yeah.
What's up, Esther?
I have an RX-7 Mazda.
Yeah.
Well, mine's making a really weird noise.
Okay.
The coolant light keeps going off when I'm on the highway. It'll just go on and off.
And you say it makes a noise?
Noise. Annoying noise.
Really? Have you, like, opened up the engine compartment to peek?
What I do is, before I leave for work, I kind of fill up the radiator just that way it wouldn't make the noise.
Yeah.
Just a little bit, and not even a cup.
Yeah.
Maybe half a cup.
But every day you have to add this half cup?
Well, that way I don't have to hear the noise, yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know what it is. I'm ready to call my mechanic because it's driving me nuts.
Oh, I wouldn't. I
don't do anything rash.
But the noise is not... The noise is not directly associated with the coolant light coming on. In other words, it isn't a warning buzzer, is it?
It is.
It is.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and it's telling you you have low coolant.
I know I do, but...
Why?
I don't know. Is that what you want to know? Why?
Why? Do I have a leak, or is it...
Yes. You have a leak.
Sure.
By definition, you have a leak. There are only a few scenarios at work here. Either someone's stealing it at night while you're parked, or it's leaking out.
If it stayed inside, you wouldn't be able to fit another cup in the next day, so therefore, it's coming out somewhere.
And I believe your radiator has a sensor at the top of the radiator that reads the coolant level, and if it just drops down an inch or so, boom, it turns
the
light on.
The light comes on. So now the question is, where is it coming from? What year is this RX-7?
91.
91.
Well, it could be a cracked engine block.
You could have a brain tumor.
I drive 12 miles a day each way.
You drive 12 miles a day.
Right.
I mean, if you're lucky, and it's most likely to be something like a bad water pump. So you need to replace the water pump.
Well, I'll cross my fingers, hopefully. Yeah. I just got new tires.
I mean, we have a philosophical question here. Would it be better to tell Esther the worst possible things it could be? Or should we just tell her? Let's face it. It could be as simple as a loose hose clamp. It could be that, which would cost zero to fix.
Well, they charge you $50, but it would cost zero. You know,
can I fix it myself?
We always have to size up the caller. And I sized you up right away, Esther, as being one who could take bad news with dignity and aplomb.
So it's an individual thing.
Yes.
You can't have a blanket policy.
And that's why I went right to the most disastrous thing.
Yeah, you could have a brain tumor.
Like Dr. Patel told me at the Mass General Hospital. It could be nothing, or you could have a brain tumor.
I don't have a brain tumor. I think my car has some kind of tumor.
Well, no, a cracked engine block would be the equivalent of a brain tumor and maybe even worse.
But a loose hose clamp would be obviously the simplest thing it could be.
Yeah.
So it probably is somewhere between those two. And right in between those two is the water pump.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I would take it someplace immediately, because if you persist in letting it run low on coolant, you're going to wreck the engine for sure.
Okay. Yeah.
It's a dangerous thing to do, because one of these days you'll be a little bit late, you'll forget to put in the cup, and then you'll be breaking the habit. The next day you won't remember that you're supposed to put in the cup of stuff. You'll get used to the light flashing.
And I know that you won't.
The noise will remind me.
The noise, you'll say, what is that noise?
Pretty soon that little buzzer will break. It's only a cheap piece of tin. And I know you were hoping that we would fix it telephonically, but we can't.
We can try.
We could try.
If we could do that.
Well, did you dial 1010-320? Because if you did, you can't get it with those discount rates.
So I guess I'll call my mechanic today.
Good idea.
You should do it.
Take the buzz.
I mean, it might be something really easy, and it's better to get it done than to wreck the engine.
Okay, I will.
All right, Esther.
Thanks for calling, Esther.
You have a good day.
You too.
Bye-bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, this is Kevin in Lafayette, Indiana.
Hi, Kevin.
How are you? Lafayette.
Yes, the automotive Bermuda Triangle of the Midwest.
Really?
Yeah.
Why so?
Well, I first started having conversations with people, they would tell me that they weren't originally from here. When I'd ask them how they wound up in Lafayette, they would say, oh, my car broke down.
Oh.
And they settled there.
And they settled there.
And they just decided to settle there.
Well, that's interesting. So that's the Bermuda Triangle of the Middle East here.
At least for automobiles, as far as I can tell.
So what's up, Kev?
Well, I have a 91 Nissan pickup truck.
Mm-hmm.
The only problem is winter is coming, and it's a two-wheel drive model.
Yeah.
And it likes to slide around a bit.
Yeah.
Now, people have recommended that I put weight over the back wheels.
Yes.
And when I ask them, you know, how much, they go, well, you should try some cinder blocks. Okay, well, how much? Well, why don't you try some sandbags? I've never really gotten a good answer as to how much is enough. Is it effective? How do I determine the optimum weight?
Yeah. Well, I mean, first of all, there are no formulas in all the reference books about this. So it really is a matter of trial and error. I would start, what does a bag of sand weigh? Something like 60 pounds, right?
I would say 80 pounds.
80 pounds.
That's
actually, it's 70 is the one that I have.
I see in the back of that pickup truck at least a half a dozen bags.
I was going to say five bags would fit conveniently across the bed of the pickup truck.
Yeah.
And bags of sand are nice. They're preferable to cinder blocks. First of all, you need a million cinder blocks.
Yeah, and the cinder blocks, are gonna, when you hit the brake, they're going to slide around, and the bags of sand aren't.
Well, I have cinder blocks, and they're in these convenient long tubes, and they say they go over the wheel well. Now, should I just place them over the wheel itself or across the bed?
You want them right over those rear wheels.
Oh. Super.
Yeah, you want them right on top of the axle.
Okay.
Yeah. Pretty much. If you put them in front of the axle, then some of the weight is shared by the front wheels, and you don't have a problem in the front.
Right.
You and if you put them behind, if you put them behind the axle, what happens then is it tends to lift up the. You know, it'll be pivot around the rear axle.
So I can be doing wheelies and stuff.
And it'll
you
tend
could
to
be
lift
doing wheelies,
up the
yeah.
front end and diminish the and impair the handling.
Yeah.
So you want it right over the axle.
Okay. Well, that sounds like
the question that occurs to me, Kev, is this. If you put sand in the back of the truck like this, then you can't use it as a pickup truck anymore. And the question becomes, well, why did you buy a pickup truck in the first place?
Actually, I still can haul most of the stuff. I'm still everybody's best friend on moving day.
Of course.
Just pile it on top of the sandbags.
Right. It doesn't take up too much space. And if it's too terrible, I just toss them aside and say, okay, let's move your sofa and where's my pizza?
And the nice thing about the sandbags is you can leave them by the side of the road and come back for them later because no one's going to take them.
They can leave them there all summer.
See you, Kev.
All right, thanks a lot.
Good luck.
Thanks.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Wendy.
Hi, Wendy.
Columbia, Missouri.
From Columbia, Missouri.
Yes.
Got it.
You know Columbia is the capital of Missouri?
No.
All right.
Jefferson City is.
Yes, I knew that.
No kidding.
Sure.
Yeah, I remember that from eighth grade.
Yeah.
Eighth grade was a pivotal year for me.
I can tell.
Everything from eighth grade down, I remember.
Most of which, nearly all of which, was useless.
No, that's the good stuff.
Adding was good.
That's the good stuff. The adding, subtraction, division, multiplication. I'm a wizard, all those things. Eighth grade on, I became uninterested. So yeah. I do remember Jefferson City.
Jefferson City. Okay.
So anyway, Wendy, what's going on?
Well, you're so good at solving problems with Volvos and teenage boys.
Yes.
That's why I called you. I have an 85 Volvo with about 90-some thousand miles on it that I turned over to my son earlier.
Only 90-some thousand? Wow.
Well,
the odometer's been broken for 10 years, huh?
That's right.
Yeah.
I thought so.
Okay.
Well, I put some new tires on it for him, and I had an alignment done on it.
Uh-huh.
And I drove it several months later, and I noticed that it's really shaky when you park it or make a hard right or left turn. And
at slow speeds?
At normal speeds, yeah, in any speed, 30, 10.
You park at 30 miles an hour?
What I'm saying, making a turn in the car.
Right. Whether it's at 30 or less.
Or parking,
yes.
Yeah. But what about higher speeds, 40, 50, 60?
Well, when you're driving straight with it on the highway, it's fine. It doesn't shake.
Okay.
And you can change lanes on the highway without any problem.
Huh.
When you say it shakes, is it accompanied by difficult steering?
Yes.
Aha! Another penetrating...
Another penetrating question.
Question.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, I suspect what's wrong here is, yeah, is something simple.
I'm going to agree with my brother on this.
And I think you have actually a loose power steering belt, and it's caused by worn-out power steering pump bushings.
I like it.
So that the whole thing, when you turn the wheel, the load imposed on the pump because you're trying to make the pump fluid to turn the wheels, you know, uh-huh, when you're parking.
And right, that's what's doing the vibrating.
And that's going, the whole pump is shaking in its little bracket because the bushings that hold the pump to the motor are all worn out.
And the nice thing about this analysis is that you can check it relatively easily.
How do I do that?
Because it's going to do it when you're stopped.
So throw open the hood.
Throw open the hood.
Have your son sit there. You don't even have to put the thing in gear. You can have it in park or neutral if it's a standard shift.
Preferably, yeah.
And turn the wheel side to side, and you will see the entire power steering pump shaking. Now, if you're not sure which thing is the power steering pump...
It's the thing that's shaking.
There you go. And then you can take it into your mechanic and tell them to fix it.
Okay.
All righty?
Great.
See you, Wendy.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for your call. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
All right. It's time for us to take a break.
You think I might have time to run out and do my holiday shopping? You know, on the way over here, I saw just the thing for you.
Oh, great. What was that? What could that have been?
Well, the Everything for a Buck store, it's having a special half-price sale. How's your supply of free-range sea kelp?
Good, thanks. I'm all set. Look, we'll be back with more of your calls and a plea for help. Not for us, although we may need it, for someone else in just a minute.
Please stay tuned.
I've got a Mercedes-Benz with MD plates. I have no trouble finding dates. I've got 1980 Subaru. One more semester, then I'm through. A slant six Dodge is no big thrill, but it's a car no atom bomb can kill. I make a lot of dough in a high-tech job. Yeah, sure, you bet. I drive a turbo sob. I'll bet you a 10, even a fiver. You find the car, I'll find the driver. It really ain't a no big deal to know who's inside that automobile.
And even though the NPR electrician makes a mental note to leave some wiring exposed in our studio whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR National Public Radio.
Hey, if you find yourself thinking, you know, this show gets worse every time I hear it, why not check out some classic shows from our archives, like when we used to be good?
When was that?
It's just a figure of speech, you know?
You can download any show from the Car Talk archives at cartalk.com. Just click where it says, listen to the show.
Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the deeper philosophical issues.
Yeah. I got a letter here, and it gets into some pretty heavy stuff. Oh. But I thought it was important, so I'm just going to read it to you without comment, okay?
I doubt it.
It's from Leah. I wonder if she...
Without comment!
I'm sorry.
Can you just read the letter?
I have a question for you both that has absolutely nothing to do with cars or mechanical things. Although you will most likely laughingly argue that you are the most unqualified people to ask, it is for this reason that I feel you both to be qualified. Here's my situation. I am a college freshman at Mount Holyoke College in South Hadley, Massachusetts. While I have always excelled in school and am continuing to do so here, I am losing my attraction to traditional education. I feel as though I am in jail, and the prospect of spending 4 years here is enough to make me wish that an alternate death sentence was available. This gets heavier, man.
Just read the letter!
I know that it might be easier if I knew what profession I wanted to go into, but here I run into another conflict. I feel that in order to be successful, I must have a real career, such as a lawyer, writer, or environmental studies consultant, all of which I suppose I would enjoy. Yet, I also want an Olympic-caliber life in riding and training hunter-jumpers. I've been riding horses since I was 2, of which I know I'm capable of accomplishing if I put my mind to it. Then there is my insatiable need for outdoor adventure, which tempts me into a life of poverty as a NOLS, National Outdoor Leadership School instructor. At the bottom of all this confusion lies a serious case of childhood withdrawal. Life just doesn't seem fun as an adult. The good stuff in life was all experienced as a child. Trips to the park, handfuls of cookie dough, and arms to carry you to bed. As of yet, I have not found a cure and instead only supporting evidence of the misery of adulthood.
Just read the letter.
So my question is this. How does one possibly live a happy, productive, gratifying life as an adult? I guess what I'm really asking is, how do I live life instead of hoping for death? And how do I reconcile my feelings about college and a career with the demands of living in America? I know you are busy, but if you have time, I'd really appreciate your feedback. We don't have time.
Wow! Jeez! What's your name?
I'm afraid I'm a... I had to go pick up her letter on the floor. I'm afraid to mention her name now.
Well, you have to give us a pseudonym. We're
Leah. Her name is Leah.
Leah, we are reaching out to you, Leah, if you're there. If you're still there.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Now,
well,
I suppose
Leah
we
is
could...
suffering from classic homesickness.
Yeah.
And that homesickness is
manifesting itself in deep depression.
Deep depression and suicidal tendencies because she's bummed out about having joined the real world and being responsible with no one to tuck her in and no one to...
Well, but she's right. I mean, it is lousy, isn't it? That's why
Never grow up. Yeah, well,
one
of us has it. Tell her she can come to work for us.
Yeah, that way she'll never have to grow up. In fact, if she grows up, she gets immediately fired. Yeah.
Right. I mean, the first thing she'd have to do is engage in a water pistol fight with Berman every Friday.
Or whipped cream. No, Leah, it doesn't have to be as bad as you say it is. You just seem to be stuck with a bunch of stiffs out there in South Hadley. That's what it sounds like to me. Give us a call.
But you know what she needs to do? She needs to, first of all, stop taking it so seriously. I think the way I overcame this, my freshman year in college, was to immediately start skipping classes. You skip a few classes and you feel liberated.
Well, no, but I mean, she does hate the classes, too.
Yeah, skip them.
Yeah.
Most of them aren't necessary.
Well, she brings up the issue is it really true that you must have a college education?
I mean, well, no, obviously it isn't true.
I mean, that's right. Bill Gates didn't think so. And in fact, I suggested people might want to read about my new theory of learning, which is on the website as we speak, which addresses this very issue. She shouldn't even be in college.
I've come to
there
realize...
There shouldn't even be any colleges, for
I've
that
come
matter.
I've come to realize that you are a dangerous individual. And somehow or another, you need to be silenced.
Hey, Leah, seriously, give us a call. We'll give you a job, and all your troubles will be over.
Absolutely.
As long as your father keeps sending those checks. I'll just send them directly to
Right, no need to send tuition to Holyoke.
Care of Dewey Cheatham and Howe.
Well, normally, we could cheer Leah up right now by screwing up the answer to last week's puzzle.
That usually gets a laugh or two.
You know, actually, you know, people take great satisfaction in nitpicking my answers, you know, and I don't understand why people take such pleasure in that, really.
Well, I can only speak for myself.
Yeah?
But I find it very cathartic to say, bogus. Try it sometime. Try and bogus.
All right, I get the hint. All right, well, next week we'll pick up where we left off with the puzzler. If you missed it, it's on the website right now at cartalk.com. Or if you'd like to talk about your car, we're at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, my name's Hope, and I'm calling you from Atlanta.
Hi, Hope.
Hi. How are you?
Hi.
Atlanta.
I'm just fine, but I'm a university professor, so...
No kidding.
Yeah, I thought I wanted to talk about my car, but now that you sort of went into it with that student that wrote you,
I feel bad, huh?
To take a position on this.
Well, I mean, I think you should feel very, very guilty. You're taking part in the giant scam known as college, quotes, education.
Oh, well, that's very interesting to hear from somebody who's part of the entertainment industry.
Why?
Well, my brother used to be a college professor, I'll have you know, until they drummed him out.
Until they caught me
at the ethics committee.
In all fairness, she brings up some of the important weaknesses of the system.
Well, there are some very, very heavy, serious weaknesses.
Yes,
what do you teach?
What do I teach? I teach geochemistry. I teach geology.
Geochemistry?
Yes, I do.
Geochemistry. That's
that
sort of the chemistry of rocks?
That usually brings the conversation to a screeching halt.
It certainly did there, I'll tell you.
What? Geological chemistry.
Yes.
The chemistry of geology.
Like what?
Give me an example.
Well, for example, how coal gets converted to diamonds. That's geochemistry, isn't it?
Yeah, I haven't dealt with that particular issue
lately. Get to that because it could be lucrative.
Yeah, forget all that stupid research you've been doing.
Start working on the diamond thing. Now.
Well.
I mean, how much geochemistry is there going on as we speak?
Oh. What a yahoo!
I'm not quite sure how to quantify that answer, but I work with archaeologists and I use chemical methods on fossils to tell them about the climate environment of the time in which these peoples lived.
So it's normal chemistry, which just happens to be used in geological applications.
That's true.
In which case, it's misnamed. It's just chemistry.
Well, actually,
you teach chemistry.
Archaeological chemistry would be more like it. So you are studying, you are able to provide information about the past.
Aren't you glad you called?
At least that's what you purport
you
to do.
You could call me a historian in that sense.
An art historian.
An art historian. That's
chemical
it.
Historian.
And you have a job?
Yeah,
so
well,
help.
A car.
Oh, we don't want to talk about your car.
You want to talk about your car or you want to talk about chemistry?
Well,
or
I have an opportunity to talk with people that are slightly more enlightening on the chemistry end of things here, but I'd rather talk with you about my car.
Hope, I happen to have several degrees in chemistry.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to discuss Fischer diagrams? I mean, I'm with you on all of this. I mean, you want
they
to
don't
discuss,
do
like,
Fischer diagrams.
PbSO4 double-double? I mean, come on. We can handle all of this.
Do you think people tune into the show to pursue their chemical concerns?
Well, no.
There may be an untapped market out there, yeah?
It may be.
Yeah. Okay,
well,
so what's with your car?
It's not strictly my car. It's the relationship between my dog and my car that's giving me problems.
Oh, yeah. Really?
It's a big dog. This is a going on 100-pound kind of dog, so you have to visualize large. Yeah. We're talking large dog.
What breed?
Well,
mutt.
Yeah,
okay,
I would say so. Mark. But all you know, if you did it democratically, it would be Great Dane and X Retriever.
Wow.
Okay, so I'm driving across the country. I'm moving to Atlanta. I have this great job, and I'm going to perpetuate the educational system of this country, which we've already discussed.
Bad as it may be, right.
And I'm driving across here. The dog's in the back of the pickup truck, and it is tied in with a tie-down type of...
Yeah, so it won't go flying out.
Well, that's the idea, yeah.
That was the basic idea.
Yeah, exactly. And I was rather particular about this tie-down because you want them to stay behind the cab so they don't get things flying in their eyes, et cetera.
Sure.
So I arranged this tie-down, and I went over to the Humane Society and talked with several people, and they said it was a fine apparatus, looked great. I started driving down the road, and the dog is not content just to stay in the back and look at this majestic country of ours go by on Highway 40.
Backwards. He's puking at the same time.
No, she's facing frontward, actually. Oh. But by the time we got to Southern California, she had decided she wanted to ride on the toolbox because that gave her a better vantage point.
Uh-huh.
And by the time we got to Arizona, she decided that she wanted to ride on top of the cab. So I drove across this country, you know, the better part of 3,000 miles, with a dog, a 100-pound dog, standing erect on top of the cab, on top of the truck.
Wow.
And this is the kind of thing that you go through some of these small towns in the middle of the country, and this is kind of
an attention getter.
Interesting sight.
I mean, people used to do this in the old days with those biplanes, you know, the stunt guys.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's possibly not good for the dog's safety, but you know what? It's affecting my mileage.
Oh, so this is where she likes to ride all the time now.
She will. If she can possibly scramble up there, she will stand fully, you know, fully standing up on top of the cab. This is a pickup truck.
All 4 feet?
All 4 feet. Yeah.
All 4 feet. It's, you know, trying to face into the wind and And really, it's a daredevil type maneuver.
And, I mean, it certainly is.
And you let her do this?
What?
I mean, didn't you think she might, like, fall off?
Well,
she has
occurred to me a couple times, actually. But short of, you know, hitting the brakes really suddenly and sort of forcing her into the back of the truck.
How did you know she was standing up,
Well, hitting
by
the brakes suddenly would force her to slide down the windshield and off the hood.
Yeah.
No, she's tied down.
Oh, she's tied down.
She's tied to the toolbox so that she can't.
Oh, so I understand. When you slam on the brakes, her momentum would ordinarily take her over the sliding down.
And then the bungee cord slings her back.
Slings her back. She slams
the windshield of the car behind you.
Well, is your larger concern the mileage or the dog? Because we could address either issue.
Well, right now it's the dog, possibly because I haven't really spent that much.
But Hope, I mean, you're going to be the talk of Atlanta. It's the wacky chemistry professor.
It really gives people the impression that some kind of animal show is coming to town.
Exactly.
I didn't figure it out until I realized people were honking at me and flashing their lights and stuff. And of course, the dog isn't back there when you turn around, and so you immediately
snap onto
the idea that something's going on.
Absent from your rearview mirror?
Well, from right behind you, because you can see into the back.
Yeah.
And you see the leash going up, and then no dog.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing that sort of startles you when you're in the middle of...
Well, I mean, but now that you've moved here, I mean, all your record collection is not on the front seat next to you, so she can now ride in the truck.
I have to put her in the truck with me? That's your solution?
No.
You know, the reason she's up there
is
she is fulfilling her duty as a dog. She is watching out for you. She is.
Sure,
and you don't have the decency to let her ride shotgun.
Yeah, she's probably protecting you.
Don't forget, dogs do that. I mean, dogs are protective, and she's loyal, and she loves you. And how do you repay her? By making her ride on the slippery roof of the truck. I think she ought to be rewarded by riding. In fact, I'd let her drive.
I couldn't just glue upside-down golf tees to the top or something.
Well, just glue her feet right to the truck, why don't you?
Well, dogs are amazingly sure-footed, but you can if you want. If you want to do something humane as opposed to inane, which is what you did on the first trip, you can buy a harness for her that will actually keep her pretty much in place in the back.
Tie her from sort of all angles?
There you go.
I thought about that, but that really restricts her mobility.
Better than that, you have a short leash with a cement block attached to it. So she can move around as she drags this. I don't know the solution, but if you don't want her to ride with you, which I think you should.
Sure, you should have her ride with you.
Oh, I have to.
Yeah, I think she has to. No, I mean ride with you in the cab.
Oh, right.
Yeah, well, you don't obviously...
Else with me, for example?
They'll ride in the back. Give them the damn harness.
Yeah, that's what the harness is for.
You have your colleagues ride in the back. What do they think?
I didn't specifically designate that they shouldn't stand on the hood.
Passengers shouldn't stand on the hood.
They probably shouldn't. Well, it's very interesting. I have to say, I've never heard of a dog doing this. And it stands to reason that you started out where? In California.
Now
where else?
You must have a photograph or maybe even a video of this, right?
Not as of yet.
Oh, you have to.
I would have to orchestrate the whole thing.
Well, orchestrate it and send us a photo, and we'll put it up on the website.
Okay.
Absolutely. Because that's where it belongs.
Thanks for calling, Hope.
Yes.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Get a harness. All right, before we take another call, we should remind people that if you ever want to, you can always download a podcast of this here show right from our website, cartalk.com.
Hey, good idea. It's holiday time.
You mean people might miss a show here and there because they're spending time with friends and relatives? Is that the...
No. I'm thinking playing our show is a perfect way to get rid of friends and relatives. Who's going to stick around for one more cup of coffee when this is on?
Oh, you like to hear Car Talk again? No, we've got to leave. Look, we'll be back with lots more of your calls in just a minute.
So please stay tuned.
One night while driving my car in the moonlight, I got to a corner and stopped at a red light. But then something happened I had not foreseen. I waited, but that light just wouldn't turn green. The lady behind me, she honked at me.
Beep, beep, beep.
Just a short toot, I let it be.
Beep, beep, beep.
but I wondered when beep. She honked once again.
Beep.
What's her problem then?
Beep, beep, beep.
Then a second car right on cue.
Beep, beep, beep.
Joined in and started honking too.
Beep, beep, beep.
Two cars honking me
beep,
very
beep,
loudly.
Beep.
But what could I do?
Beep.
I was stuck there too.
Beep.
Those cars had to know
beep,
that I couldn't go.
Beep.
Still one more horn began to blow.
Beep, beep.
My patience was wearing thin.
And even though poets everywhere wonder what rhymes with imbecile whenever we say it, this is NPR, National Public Radio.
Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tapper Brothers. And we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and not the new Puzzler.
No? No new Puzzler? What happened to the Puzzler this week?
Overdid the tryptophan, you know. Been out like a light since Thursday.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, really? Anyway, if you're interested in our current Puzzler, you can find it at our website, cartalk.com, and we'll have a new Puzzler, of course, next week.
If you'd like to talk about your car, the number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Jonathan calling from Denver.
Hi, Jonathan.
How are you?
Well, I could be better. My car is just a pain in the tuchus, as they say.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
What you kind called of a car? The right guys, Jonathan.
Yeah. Now, we're couple of tuchuses ourselves.
I've got a noise to make for you.
Well, what kind of a car is it?
We don't want to know.
Don't tell us. We'll tell you.
No. Okay.
You tell
ahead.
Us the noise, and we'll tell you what kind of car you got.
No, go ahead and tell me what car it is.
No, you need
to hear the noise first.
What's the noise?
Okay. The noise has to do with the car, but it's not coming from the car. This is the noise. I get a call. And I hear this. Jonathan, this is Frank. I've got your car. It's ready. And then I go and pick it up.
Yeah.
And I take it home, and it's the same problem. And then I get the same noise again later. I worked on your car again. I think it's ready. What do I do about this problem?
Oh, that kind of car. Okay, your car, I'm getting Japanese.
Oh, no.
You're not getting Japanese?
Oh, no.
Oh, I'm getting...
Japanese, yeah.
I'm getting Japanese. Asian. I'm getting a strong Asian influence here.
Yes. Must be the Chinese food you had last night.
I'm getting... if I only could see the color. Is it black?
It's gray.
Gray! That's black! Light black! Light black!
Gray is
light
black! You guys are amazing!
It's light black! I mean, I have to go with my first instinct, man. Honda.
Yes.
Huh?
Yes. Very impressive.
It might be the only thing I'm right about all day. Honda what?
It's a Honda Accord, an 85 Honda Accord. It belonged to my parents. They gave it to me after it had 100,000 miles on it. I put another 50 on it. And I was told by the first mechanic I took it to, let's call him Bill. And Bill said, oh, this is a carburetor problem. I had to leave it there overnight because it had a cold start problem in the morning. Leave it overnight. He says, oh, this is a carburetor problem. It's going to cost $600 to replace your carburetor.
Yeah.
Oh.
So I called up a carburetor place because I thought maybe they could rebuild it. So I take it to this guy who works on carburetors, and he says, sure, I can fix it. And he works on it, and he's the one who keeps calling me up and telling me he thinks he has it ready, and it's still not ready. But he thinks he has it now.
Has he rebuilt it?
He took a bunch of gunk out of it, he said.
Yeah.
And he replaced the electric choke.
Yeah.
Okay, it's good.
Good.
Yeah.
Now, he said that he figured out the problem eventually, and the way to fix it, if I don't get this part replaced, you just have to hit it with a hammer. You guys have to tell me what that part is.
Well, he thinks the floats are stuck.
No.
The needle valves are stuck.
No, he said the needles are fine. It's the fuel shut-off solenoid.
Oh, okay.
I've asked him to order that part. He says it may take about a week and a half.
Well, I mean, if that really is the problem, nothing else may have been wrong.
Well, is it true that it starts and runs for like a half a minute and then starts to give you trouble?
No. It does. It runs. It'll turn over. It cranks. It turns over. But it'll catch for maybe a second or two, and then it just dies.
And then it just dies. And how does it then start? What do you have to do to get it started?
I'll start it up, and it's barely running, and I'll pump the gas real hard, and then I'll double clutch it all the way down the street to this guy's shop and leave it there.
That's not what it is then.
Really?
Because that shuts off the fuel completely. It wouldn't run at all. You would never be able to get it started.
He says it's stuck halfway.
Oh, that sounds good, doesn't it?
Oh, that's... Come on!
Do you think this guy's ripping me off?
No,
he's not ripping you off, but I don't think he knows what's going on.
But he's learning a great deal at your expense.
He did say that to me. He said, you know, I know more about 85 Honda Accords than I ever thought I'd learn.
And how much is he paying you for this education?
Well, my wife's not very happy because I'm using her car, so...
How much has he charged you so far?
I'm embarrassed to say it. $350 for the initial work, and he wants to order the $60 part and put it in.
Right.
And what he
said it's going to run fine after that.
And for 85 cents more, you could have bought a new carburetor.
Do you think I should just buy a new car?
No, not now. No, you got to go. You're married to him now. Well, let him install the fuel cutoff solenoid. What the hell? I mean, you're in this far, Jonathan.
Yeah. I mean, but frankly, I don't think that's going to do it.
Nor do I. But don't let that discourage you.
You guys, I'm disappointed. So what can I do if the fuel solenoid doesn't work?
Jeez, and he didn't check the fuel pump?
I just had the fuel pump replaced.
I mean, it might not even be fuel related.
I mean,
I don't want to, but no. I mean, you could have a plugged up catalytic converter.
That's what my father-in-law said. My father-in-law, who loves cars, and he said, check the catalytic converter.
Well, I mean, it could be something like that. It could be lots of things. I don't know why we have focused on this poor little carburetor.
See, here's one of the problems with going to a guy that is a, quote, carburetor specialist.
Yeah.
That's all he knows.
That's all he knows, and that's all he's going to fix.
Yeah.
So I don't know if the glove box won't lock, he's going to rebuild your carburetor.
Well, what else can he do?
Because
it's his specialty.
By going to him, you've already diagnosed it as a carburetor
problem.
No,
Bill.
Listen to this.
Bill diagnosed it.
Well, somebody did.
Well, at one point, he did say he was going to take it to another shop and have them figure it out for him. He was at that point.
Well, that's good. I would let him do that.
But then he went back to the fuel solenoid.
No, I'd stick with him. It sounds like he's homing in on it.
Yeah, but he's not there yet.
We're getting warmer.
Yeah,
and I predict that you're going to find out it wasn't the carburetor in the first place.
Okay.
Well, we'll be anxious to hear from you.
Okay, I'll let you know.
All right, Jonathan.
Take care.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Bye-bye.
His wife's throwing him out. He's stealing her car.
He's got to tie a pork chop around his neck to get the dog to play with him now. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Leah Fry from South Hadley.
Oh, my God.
Leah.
Remember me?
We've been so worried.
Jeez.
I feel bad. I didn't mean to worry you guys.
Well, you did. I mean, that letter you sent us had such a tone of discouragement and depression.
Well, yeah, I'm going through a pretty tough time, but don't worry. I'm not suicidal or anything, so I hope you didn't get that from my letter.
Well, I mean, are things any better since you wrote the letter?
Well, they're better right now. I mean, I'm just ecstatic to be talking with you guys. You've just made my day.
Well, that's great.
But, you know, I mean, I'm just trying to hang in there and try to find answers, but it's really hard.
Answers, huh? I mean, basically, what are you just homesick? I mean, you miss being with your friends and your family?
Yeah, I'm pretty homesick. I'm homesick for the geography is so different here. I'm from Washington originally, so...
Yeah.
It's just, I miss the mountains and the water and all of
that. We have water?
What?
We have water?
Not where I am. Not much.
Yeah, no, you don't have any ocean there in South Hadley. You're right, actually. Now that I think of it, it is kind of a depressing little place.
Well, no, it isn't. No,
well, it is.
In fact, most kids are kind of excited to get away from the clutches of their parents and go off and be on their own and be responsible for themselves and... You can stay up as late as you want. You can come in at night whenever you want. You can do whatever you want as long as you can go to class if you want or not go to class. You can make new friendships.
Yeah, well,
it's kind of an exciting time.
Yeah.
Have
you made any new friends?
Yeah, I've made some new friends, and that's really good. But I put a lot of pressure on myself to always be achieving and always to get the A's. And so it's a lot more of that.
A's are very overrated.
What?
A's are overrated.
You think
B's
so?
Are good enough.
Oh, absolutely.
Fact, sometimes a C is pretty good. I bet a few C's look pretty good.
C's? Sometimes you'd pay $100 for a D, man.
I tried that. They wanted 500.
Woo! No, I mean, if that's what's troubling you, I mean, you shouldn't do that to yourself. Mm-hmm. A's are vastly overrated. My brother is absolutely right. I mean, I think. I never had any. I've heard that they're vastly overrated. And the people who have the A's, they're not any better than you.
Uh-huh.
And they're probably not nowhere near as happy.
Well, I know. See, that's the thing is I'm trying to weigh my happiness and saying, is it worth it to be sacrificing all of that just to be getting the 4-point GPA?
Yeah. More importantly, it sounds to me from your letter that you're studying stuff that you're not interested in.
Well, I mean, it's interesting, but I've just pushed myself for so many years to be doing so well that I've just burned out on it.
Yeah, and that happens.
That does happen.
You don't want to burn out now. This is the wrong time to peak. Trust me on this.
When's the right time?
Well, I don't know, but it's a long ways away. Yeah, so you don't want to peak now.
Uh-huh.
I mean, what if you told yourself that a B was absolutely spectacular? And then think of how wonderful you'd feel. Suddenly, nights would come when people would say, hey, want to go to a movie? And you'd say, sure.
Sure, I can get a B in that course without even doing the work.
I got an A average now. It's too high. I mean, what if you told yourself that you don't want any A's?
God, that'd be so tough. But...
Sheesh.
You are a very self-motivated individual.
I mean, I don't know if I should divulge this on public radio here.
Divulge it.
To the public, but... I have a son who's in high school, and when he first started high school, he, too, thought that he had to get A's, and he was miserable, and I told him one day, A's are not important, B's are great. Mm-hmm. He looked at me like the whole world had opened up to him, and he said, you gotta be kidding. I said, are you kidding? A B is absolutely wonderful. Ever since he realized that, he never does any homework anymore. But I told him that because he was getting too tense.
Mm-hmm.
He was losing perspective on what life is all about.
Oh, I remember him. He kept saying, I'm a wigwam. I'm a teepee. I'm a wigwam. Too tense.
Too tense. Wigwam. That was bad.
Hey, on the spot, what do you want on the spot?
No, and the point is that an A is not all that important. You have a whole life that you have to live.
Yeah.
And grades are just one little piece of it.
Well, I will confess to you, I received many A's during my collegiate career.
Uh-huh.
Wait, what?
I also got a lot
Swimming doesn't count.
And I will admit that there were many courses in which I got A's that I learned less than the courses in which I got C's in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if learning the stuff is the most important thing, which I think it is, then the grade is unimportant. And once you've accepted that philosophy, then you can go and study the stuff for itself and not for the grade.
I know.
And that's what you need to do. Mm-hmm. Don't focus on the grade. Focus on learning the stuff and having fun, because you're only going to be 20 once.
And more importantly, when you don't want to get A's, you have the ideal opportunity to keep the professors honest.
Uh-huh.
Because most of them are feeding you a crock of crap. And if you're just sitting there, if you're just sitting there in a very relaxed mode, not taking notes, never take notes. Never take notes in class.
Oh, I take them so profusely.
And sure, tell that sociology professor, what's his name, Moran?
Yeah, tell him to shape up.
Right.
Because we're sick and tired of him.
Right, tell him you're sick of listening to his lies.
I mean, you can just sit there casually and ask all the most pithy questions and keep those bums honest. Because don't forget, these are all people who can't get a job anywhere else.
Okay.
Remember, you're better than they are.
Absolutely. Because you're not going to end up as a lowly college professor.
Oh, of course not.
Of course not. You're much better than they are. So if you ever get down low again, Leah, call us anytime, day or night.
Seriously?
Absolutely.
We will guide you through these 4 years at that two-bit school that you're at.
Okay.
And in the process, we'll probably straighten them out. So any particular problems you have on any subject, we except biology. I don't understand anything about biology.
Doug knows biology.
Doug knows biology.
Right.
So we're covered. Okay. There isn't a course you can take that among everyone in this studio, we couldn't tell you anything you want to know.
Okay.
So let us be your personal mentors.
Are you a freshman? If you're there, I'll take you up on it.
It's a deal.
Really?
We'll do your homework for you. What do we charge for homework these days?
Yeah. Send us the assignments. We'll fax you back the stuff that you should do.
Okay, well, I won't take advantage of you, but I may check in now and again. Okay.
Well, we'll be checking with you just to make sure you're okay.
And I'm telling you right now, as a father figure, I don't want to see any A's.
Okay.
I don't want any A's.
No A's.
And no C's either.
B's? Either A's or F. B's or F's.
B's or F's.
B's or
F's. I want all B's.
Okay, I think I can handle the B's, I think.
I know you can do it.
Okay.
If you see yourself getting close to an A, then do something stupid like, you know, slap the instructor and the kisser. Do something just to tick them off and get back down to a B.
Okay.
See you, Leah.
All right, thank you very much.
Keep smiling.
Keep us posted, really.
Okay, I will.
Great.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Well, you've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to cards. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are Louis Cronin the Barbarian and David the Cavs of Belleville Green. Our senior web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati, and our production assistant is Aaron Wax. Our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Bonneville Flats, Simmering Vats, Barbecued Gnats, German-style brats, margarine pats, and chilled labats, no trans fats, chew, chomp, and chats, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Heywood Jabuzoff. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. Our second shift meteorologist is Cloudy Overnight. Our food taster is Howard M. Burgers. Our used car salesperson of the month is Meg Meehan-Hoffa. Our director of vengeance is Yule Rudy Day. Tommy's personal psychiatrist is Manny Luz Cruz. Our seasonal adjustment disorder specialist is Mahmoud S. Bleak. Our optometric firm is CFI Care. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. The head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the chainmail-clad meter maids in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And remember this, don't drive like my brother.
And remember this, don't drive like my brother.
And remember this, don't drive like my brother.
Don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. CDs of the show, which is number 848, along with Car Talk clothing, audio collections, and other Car Talk gifts, are available at 888-CAR-JUNK or by going to the Shameless Commerce division of our website, cartalk.com.
Also this week at cartalk.com, the rotten little elves at the Shameless Commerce division have put together some special collections of Car Talk CDs.
Oh, yeah, no, I saw them. They have a box set or something with, like, all 10. We have 10, believe it? All 10 Car Talk albums.
Yeah.
I just can't figure out why anyone would want that.
Well, it's like the podcast. You put it on to chase away guests who linger too long after dinner. The ones who don't realize that when you put on your pajamas, that should be a hint to them.
It should be, right.
Check out the wide variety of Car Talk audio gifts all week at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though NPR employees suddenly rush around and remove all traces of mistletoe whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR National Public Radio.